Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Shit Show with J-Bo. In this episode, I got to interview Joy Villa. She is a rad political activist slash independent musical artist who hit the national consciousness while wearing a Make America Great Again dress at the Grammys. She has topped all the musical charts that matter, and Alex Jones has dubbed her MAGA Monroe. So sit back and listen to this independently minded and fierce young woman. Oh, Joy let me use a song at the very end of this podcast, so check that out. Thanks, Joy. I really appreciate it. This is the Shit Show with J-Bo. Here's my theme song.
This is singer, songwriter, artist, number one on iTunes, Amazon, and Billboard, and political activist.
Hello, Joy.
Hi.
Are you really number one on all those things you just mentioned?
Yes, I hit number one on all those. I mean, in various different times, I've been number one on all of those.
Now, that happened when you blew up, and that's when I saw you into the national consciousness with your fairly controversial, at the time and currently, I suppose, Make America Great Again dress, correct?
That's right. That's right. That's when I hit number one on all the charts, and my last release, Home Sweet Home, surpassed Taylor Swift on the charts. So, like, recently my music has still been, you know, hitting it high up there. It hit number two, just below Justin Timberlake. So I'm in pretty good company, but I'm really blessed.
Now, do you think that success, because you're basically speaking your mind, you're not being scared by the industry people who say you can't be pro-Trump and all this. Do you feel like that will inspire other people? I mean, we just had Roseanne come on TV, and apparently her new show, and she's pro-Trump on the show and possibly in real life. And it did gangbusters business. It did a ton of business. Do you think more people will kind of start speaking their mind? I mean, are there other Trump supporters in Hollywood that would like to, that are maybe a little freaked out from doing so?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I'll tell you, Roseanne is a real Trump supporter in real life
and
on her show. So that's what makes it so authentic and so amazing. But even if she wasn't, even if the actress wasn't, that would be such a smart move because look at, it's gotten the most views. It got so many views. I think it got like 6 million views its first day, something huge, 16, I don't know, whatever the big hype number is. But it is actually a successful action if you come out strong and you come out in support of the president. People don't realize that. But when I came out in my Trump dress, I didn't realize that. I didn't know until after, obviously. But I thought, okay, now when they see that I shot up the charts, when I made a bunch of money, when I got people, you know, like I got on the national news, when I got, you know, all this attention, I was like, wow, so everyone's going to want to be pro-Trump now. This is good. But no, we see Kathy Griffin holding the president's head up and making a mockery. We see, you know, tons of comedians, Chelsea Handler, mocking him. So I was disappointed because I really was hoping that I would set the stage. But here we go, a year and a half later, you know, almost 2 years after I wore my dress, about a year and a half later, we have Roseanne. So we do see it. It's just a late thing. But I do think in the next coming years, I've said this on Fox News, it always gets worse before it gets better. Hopefully now we're in the time where it's getting better.
I mean, what's going to happen to all the people that have literally been just shouting on top of the mountains how horrible the administration is and how horrible people are who support him and labeling people these terrible things? What's going to happen when that becomes accepted? I mean, what's going to happen to those people who have been such haters for so long?
It's a good question. I mean, I think they're going to slither back into their holes and find a new game like they always do. You know, the CNN anchors, Don Lemon, you know, all of those guys were just gross and disgusting. And just attack. I mean, they're just going to they're going to get bored. Their writers, their, you know, team is just going to say, oh, well, now we're going to like the president and we're going to make it a change. But I still don't think they're going to, they still have to have something to fight. So they still have to have some sort of controversy and drama. That's how they live. So they'll make up something. I mean, it's not like it's all going to be sunshine and rainbows and everyone's going to realize that we actually have an amazing administration who cares for us. But I do think the regular Americans, the hands in the dirt, going to school, going to work, feeding their families, many of them which, you know, thought the Democratic way was the right way, are going to see that they have more money in their pockets when they vote for President Trump, or when they see that President Trump is the president. So in 2020, they're going to change their vote. I already see Democrats saying, wow, well, actually, he's doing good for the economy, so I'm going to vote for him in 2020. So that's where the change is going to be. And I do think from that, you are going to see more Trump supporters who are authentically Trump supporters come out and not be afraid and do something artistic. Maybe, you know, wear a Trump shirt on the Hollywood, you know, in an interview or something. Do something like a little bit like I did. I hope that I made waves to encourage people to do that, because that's the only way we're going to change it.
It's crazy how there seems to be half this country living in one reality, half living in another reality. And it's all kind of based on what news you follow. How can one side feel that it's the end of the freaking world, the fucking world? So you can swear on my podcast. And the other side is convinced that this man is, anti-censorship, pro-America, pro-borders, and feel like it's great. I've never felt the division in my life before. I called it a cold civil war. I don't think I coined that term, but I did come up with it in my own mind. How can people be living in two separate realities, you know?
Oh, I know. It's crazy. No, it is freaking crazy. I mean, I do think that one of the realities is that people think everything is going to hell, everything is bad, and those people want it to be bad. You know, so nothing's going to change for them.
Right.
I mean, I don't understand. What do they see that is going to hell? What do they see that is all, you know, shitty and crazy to them? I see a world that is changing for the better. I see less jobs that are gone. I see more jobs. You know, I see jobs that are going to more Hispanics, because Hispanic employment is down. Unemployment is down. Black unemployment is down. Women unemployment is down. So I see minorities being able to get jobs. We see the White House that is hitting hard against drug traffickers and human traffickers. So these are great things. But, you know, in your world, if you, you know, I don't know, if you were raised in a world where, you know, you got everything from mommy and daddy, and now it's like a harsh reality that everything is not what you think it should be, I guess you're gonna think the world is crappy. I mean, really, they're nasty people who see that. They are not good people who want the world to be bad. There are a few of those. They make a loud noise, and everyone listens to them and starts believing them. But really, the people who believe those few crazies are just disillusioned. They're just around some crazy people who keep talking nuts, like, you know, CNN. Like, if you watch CNN all day, you would believe the world is going to hell in a handbasket. But you turn it off, you start talking to regular people, you're like, oh, life is getting better, not getting worse.
Yeah, the internet is oftentimes a false reality. The real world is much, much different. Now, I know that some of your original recordings, your EPs you put out, they were independently released. Is that correct?
That's correct. All of my music is independently produced.
You probably make a lot of money because of that. I mean, you're taking all that, right?
That's right.
That's kind of amazing.
Money. Yeah, it doesn't force me to do other things to make money. I can just make my music and make money from it. You know, of course, I like to do other things as well, but you see a lot of celebrities or stars, singers especially, who don't really make a lot of money on their music because their recording companies pretty much own it. So they're forced to do perfume lines and grueling tour schedules. And there's nothing wrong with those things, but it's just, I don't have to do anything I don't want to do. If I do a perfume line, it's because I want to, you know, so there's definitely that independent spirit in me, that boldness.
Yeah.
I am a businesswoman. I run my own business, Joy Villa. I am my own business. and I have my own merchandise, and I get to choose what messages I say. You know, I'm regularly on Fox, so I can do all those things without the fear of angering someone, you know, who holds my music or holds my money.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm truly a free artist, and I love it.
So in your mind, you are a musician first, yes?
Say that again?
In your mind, you're a musician first. I mean, that's where your true passion lies, yes?
Yes. You know, in my mind, I'd say I'm a creator first. I grew up, you probably don't know, but a lot of people are surprised to know, but I grew up doing musical theater. So I grew up singing, dancing, acting. I do all of those things really well. And I realized music is my number one passion in what I do, you know, in the arts, and everything fell from that. But I enjoy it when I'm acting. I enjoy when I'm writing, because I write all my own songs. I enjoy when I'm creating things. You know, I write short stories. I've written scripts. I enjoy being on the stage. I enjoy public speaking. So I would probably say that I'm a performer in that aspect. I enjoy all of it. But music is my number one.
Now, when you, I know, I heard an interview that you actually write your own music, which is great.
Yeah.
I respect those people so much more than if it's a conglomerate, people like making somebody else a star.
Yeah.
How do you start off? Do you have a collaborator, or do you have a guitar? Do you play piano? How is the initial process? How does it work?
Well, usually I'll have an idea for a song. Sometimes on my own, I'll just record. I'll be in the gym. I'll be out, and I'll just record it on my phone. I'll go, oh, that's a great idea, like a melody, you know, something like that, or a phrase, or I'm not going to take it. You know, I go, oh, that's great. I'll record it. And then I'll take it to, I do have a co-writer, a good friend of mine, Dede O'Malley, she's magical at turning those into songs. So we'll go, I'll say, I have this great little ditty. I'll send it to her, and she'll go, oh, I hear a song in that. That's great. Then we'll sit down. She'll play some guitar. She's like, I hear these chords, you know, this riff. I go, oh, yeah, that's great. Or, no, I'm thinking more like that. And then we'll just create it out of that. And if that's when I'm working with her, it goes really fast because there's two of us. And she can see, she can add in some melodies. And lyrics-wise, you know, we can both write some stuff. She'll say, well, what do you really want to say here? And she sort of coaches me through it. And I'll go, yeah, I really want to say this.
Okay.
So that's what we've been doing recently is sort of co-writing this and crafting things together. But when I'm on my own, sometimes these songs just come out. You know, sometimes I'll just have a full on the lyrics, the melody, everything, and I'll just write that down, and then I'll go to a producer and I'll say, hey, I've got this song. Let's record it. And then it's just done. So sometimes it takes a little more crafting, and sometimes it's just like a bolt of lightning. Amazing. You know, I always wish for those bolts of lightning, like every artist. But, you know, as long as I'm working on my craft and really creating good music and good songs that are authentic, I don't think about, oh, I want to write a song that's like a huge hit, like Pitbull hit or something. That's not my intention. Of course, I want my music to be a hit, but I want it to be authentic. I want it to say what I want it to say. I wanted to communicate, and I wanted to make people feel good or feel the feelings that I want in the song. And then, of course, I want people to, like, go, oh, I love this. So it is like you think about your audience, but really, truly, you have to think about your craft as an artist first and then produce something that the audience will hopefully like.
Now, since you've become overt pro-Trump, pro-conservative, do you feel pressure to be political in your music at all? Are you specifically trying to appeal to the people that really love the fact that you wore the MAGA dress?
You know, I don't feel – I think every artist who has a huge fan base, you know, who acquires a huge fan base, does feel, in effect, like they're loyal to their fans. You know, I feel very loyal to my fans because they've been loyal to me. And they're incredible. I have the best fans. They send me letters. They send me things, cards. You know, they talk to me. All these awesome comments. And I do my Joy Villa show, which is a live streaming show on Periscope and Facebook. So I do the Joy Villa show where I interact with my fans and I just talk about different things. So I talk about politics a lot because I am a political activist. I am very political. I'm very strong on that. I'm pro-life. I'm pro the Constitution, Second Amendment. I'm pro-Trump. So I'm very strong with these things. You know, I even thought of possibly, you know, running for Congress. You know, I put on an exploratory committee. So politics is in my world no matter what. But as far as wanting to say things exactly to my fans, I mean, yeah, I do in my music, I do want to speak to them, but I don't want to alienate anyone else. And I don't want to get stuck in the rut. You know, I'm not just a political artist. I'm an artist who happens to be political. So I keep that at the forefront.
Okay. Okay. Now I know, let's see here, and I'll edit all this. I was listening to you.
Yeah.
I slightly lost my, train of thought. Let's see. You started out as you were an Obama supporter, and I do think he was the right man for the job at the time, personally.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And then I know you jumped over and you were a Bernie fan. At least that's what I read. I don't actually know, but at some point, What happened? Where was your personal transformation? Aside, I see from like Bernie and Trump are similar in respect, like kind of the opposite ends of the spectrum, but both like hardcore grassroots supporters and kind of mm-hmm. radical in their own ways. When did you jump over? How did that happen?
Yeah, you know, I was raised Republican, and I was raised, you know, we loved the Bushes in our house. We were very like just stone cold Republicans, but it was my parents. Like my parents were Republicans, you know,
okay.
when I was a kid. So it wasn't a big, you know, during the 90s, early 2000s. I remember Bill Clinton was president. I remember all that. I remember being like, oh, my gosh, is he ever going to get out of here? And then the impeachment. So, you know, I remember my parents grumbling about that and my dad being a very firm, you know, Fox News watcher. So I remember that in the house. And as I grew up, you know, my first time I could vote at 18, Obama was running, and I had lived in Hollywood by that time. And it was definitely, you know, I do think that everybody wanted a black president. So I voted for Obama because I thought he was the best man for the job. You know, I know he really did nothing but destroy America. You know, in my opinion, he was not a good president at all. But at the time, it was a very hopeful time in the country.
Now, when he wasn't a good president, I'm just curious, like, I might agree with you on certain points, but specifically, how do you mean that?
Well, he said he was going to bring the troops back. That was another big thing why I voted for him.
Okay.
I have a lot of relatives in the military. He said he would bring the troops home. That was what he campaigned on, like Trump campaigns on the wall, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he has to build that wall because all his followers will go, what? So he campaigned on bringing the troops home, and he didn't do that. So that was a huge disappointment for me. That was something that, you know, like many politicians, that's what they say, what they want to do. But then when they get elected, suddenly they stop. You know, like Hillary, when she was always campaigning for different things, you know, she would always talk about the black community. But once she got elected, she did nothing for the black community. So you see, this is sort of the same political thing. I mean, I became disillusioned because I was like, all right, all Obama is doing is being black and being president. And that's given people like, oh, wow, we have a black president. And then as that wears down, as that like sort of la la land feel wears down, he didn't lower taxes. I think taxes were raised under him. He didn't bring the troops back. The Obama phone, Obamacare was a mess. He didn't do anything to help change black communities, even though he talked about it. He basically ignored them. You know, he tried to act like, oh, yeah, he cares about black people, but only because he's black. I mean, it just was a huge disconnect between what he was campaigning on and what he actually did. The results after 8 years, I was disappointed. And I really didn't follow politics that well after that. After I became disillusioned with him, you know, after the first couple of years, I was like, okay, this is just phony baloney. So really, I just threw myself into my art, you know, did all kinds of crazy fun stuff, you know, being young, lived a college life, but not college, but imagine that in Hollywood. And then came along the 2016 election cycle, and most of my friends, my musician friends, were pro-Bernie. So I really did, I was attracted to him initially because, well, it's word of mouth. And they were like, no, this guy's, like you said, grassroots. And, you know, his ideas on foreign trade, like he wants to bring, you know, stop all the foreign trade deals. I thought, oh, cool. This guy's like, I thought he was more of like a populist, you know. And I wasn't really going like, oh, I wasn't hardcore Republican at that time. You know, I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to vote Republican because I had voted Democrat for Obama. I really wasn't like, oh, I'm a Republican. I didn't have my voice in there. And I didn't see a lot of young people who did either at that time. Until now, obviously, now I see it all and it's amazing. But I really just thought, oh, yeah, Bernie. So, you know, I shot off a couple tweets in support of him. And I never really got into it, you know, once I found out he's a socialist and once I found out he's not, he's obviously not a conservative and he's not, he really wants to just give away people's money to others. I said, okay, well, he's not the person. And then I had to make a choice, Hillary or Clinton. I mean, Hillary Clinton or Trump, you know, Donald Trump. And I knew I would never vote for Clinton. But I said, I got to look at this Donald Trump character. Is he who he says he is? It's funny. I wasn't pro-Trump in the beginning. Not at all. I was like, oh, no. This guy, you know, he's a bully. And I was overseas as well. So being in Asia, you know, and only having a few friends who were like, oh, I'm pro-Bernie or I'm pro-Hillary. And I was like, okay, not Hillary.
That's what were you doing in Asia, Joy?
I was touring.
Okay, you're right, with your group.
Yeah. Touring with my band and doing music. So I toured for 4 years. I toured 35 countries a year. So I'm going to actually be picking up another tour. I'm looking at what I'm doing. I've spent most of my time in the last year and a half in America. But I toured quite heavily with my music as an independent artist. So before people really in the States knew who I was pretty big in Asia. I'd always go to Japan and Indonesia. You know, my music video, Vagabonds, is in Indonesia. And yeah. I have a great fan base. All over the world. I also do Paris, London, you know, Italy. So I really love touring the world. It gave me a big perspective as well. And that's what my song Home Sweet Home is about. Mm-hmm. Being to all these countries, seeing all, doing everything that, you know, you dream of travel. But realizing there is no place like America.
Hollywood, what's that like? I know there's the Me Too movement, lambasts almost every male, Harvey Weinstein. Now, my question is, obviously, it's a system that has been going on a long time. Obviously, there's a lot of dirtbag males. I'm sure you've experienced that. How many women have accepted these sleazebag offers and are famous to this day? And that's not talked about too much. I mean, it's really just the culture, isn't it? As opposed to completely on men. Or how do you see things that way?
Oh, absolutely. I agree. It really is the culture. You see, like, there is something about Hollywood. It's elusive. It's shiny. It's golden. It's the land of promise, the land of milk and honey. And young girls will come from all over the world, all over, you know, and especially all over the U.S. in small states. They've never seen this before. And they want fame. They truly think all they have to do is land in Hollywood and they will get discovered. I do it too. But a lot of these women, they were like, oh, you know, I mean, they know Hollywood is all about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Like, you know, it. A lot of sex sells, you know, you can see it all the time. So they get caught in a situation where maybe the casting director is like, oh, honey, you're perfect. All you got to do is take off your top and, you know, show me what you got. And now there is the choice by the woman. Does she go, well, screw it. I'll do it. You know, I mean, I'm not going to have sex with it, but I will show it off, you know, or whatever. Or I'll just do a little bit of this. I won't do that. You know, you can justify it. She probably could justify in her mind. Or does she go, oh, my God, no way, and just leave? Now, many women, when faced with poverty, like Hollywood is expensive to live in. It's tough. You maybe this is your 20th interview in the last week where everyone said, no, 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 it's an audition, or you're trying to get an agent. You're trying to survive. A lot of these women will just do it. And some of them will do it and go, well, fuck it. I look great.
Yeah.
I'm going to show it off. And they come with the intention, knowing the guy is a sleazebag or knowing he's like, ooh, she's hot. Let them know what they, when they're hot, they know they're hot. Okay. Like, I know I'm hot. I know when I walk in a room wearing
a hot joy
dress. I know it. Thank you, Jesse. So I know guys are looking at me. Now, how do I use that? Am I going to go up to the guys and be like, hey, baby, and start flirting with them? I mean, no, you know, but we know it. You can feel that. And it's one of the easiest things to do is to hook a guy, hook, line, and sinker, just wear a low-cut blouse or wiggle around a little. And a lot of these women have dreams of being the next Marilyn Monroe. So they will do whatever it takes. People aren't talking about that. And the culture is permissive. It's promiscuous. It allows this sort of thing. In fact, it emulates this sort of thing. It looks up to it like, oh, yeah, oh, she's a femme fatale. Sure, maybe in a movie that would work. But like in real life, you're destroying lives, you're destroying marriages, you're helping perpetrate more of this. So the woman who like willingly does it will enable this guy to then force another woman who doesn't want to willingly do it. But then he goes, well, fuck, 5 out of 10 women were doing it. Why is this woman not doing it? And then he just forces himself on her. So it's a victimizing culture where men and women are complicit in it. Not only are they complicit, but they're helping perpetrate it. So it's not just the men, of course not. It's not just even the men in power. Now that is unfortunately what we see is the men in power, like Harvey Weinstein. I mean, yeah, he deserves what he got, but we know we can't. Keep
what did he get court. Though? Did he even? He didn't go to jail or anything.
I don't even know what he got. I mean, he got totally, you know,
ostracized.
Pushed out of Hollywood. I mean, his name it might as well be in jail. Like he was at the top. He was the king of all these films and actors and everyone, and he got completely pushed away and ostracized.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, he's on the black market. So like, I mean, there's no way he can come back unless. I'm sure somebody who's really good at dealing with this can make him come back. Bill Clinton can come back. I guess he could. But, you know, I mean, we don't want, now the culture's changing. We don't want him to come back. We don't want those kind of things to happen. But I do think that these actresses who come out are like, oh, yeah, Harvey Weinstein, they need to be honest with themselves and be like, yeah, well, I also allowed him to touch me, and I'm ashamed of that. You know, that would be really powerful if women came up and were like, I helped perpetrate this. You know, I shouldn't have done that. I walked in and I knew he was in a row, but I said, well, I want the part. And I feel ashamed. Like there needs to be those kind of voices coming up.
Precisely.
That would be amazing. That would be an honest portrayal, not just, you know, he touched me, you know, I mean, yeah, but you were like fully complicit in it.
Now I know that
need to differentiate what really is rape and sexual abuse and sexual harassment. That's when a person says no, stop, pushes them away, and the person continues to do it and does it. That's different. That's a crime. That's sexual assault. That's a total crime. But when somebody comes up and is like, oh, he's kind of cute, or maybe I can get the role, they don't say anything. In fact, they let their dress fall. That's not sexual abuse. You're fully complicit in it. That's a sexual, you know, favor. That's happening. That's sex. You can't then claim to be the victim if you fully went in there knowing what was going to happen and you never said no until now you decide, oh, I don't want to be look like a bad guy, even though now I'm famous and rich off of what I did. No, you're just as bad as the guy doing it.
No doubt. Now I know you experienced some of this. I've seen you talk about interviews when you're 19 or something, walking into a producer's office and he tried to say some things. And then I know that Corey Lewandowski slapped you a couple times on the rear end and you told him no, he did it again. What has been the fallout with what happened with you and Corey Lewandowski?
There's been a lot of negative comments. There's been people who have turned their back on me. There's been people who have really insulted me quite a bit and who don't understand, you know, the situation. The fallout really was the emotional aspect of realizing, you know, when you do something or something happens to you, people are going to have their own spin and their own opinion on it without knowing the truth or without wanting to know the truth. Or without saying, oh, wow, that happened to you. That's awful, you know, but that you're still here and you follow through. They really want to blame somebody. And that's really where the court of public opinion comes in. So I would say I'm much stronger after that because I don't look at what negative people say. I'm not going to be stopped by someone's opinion, like, oh, it's all your fault, you did wrong, look how bad you are. You know, those are kind of the voices that I think a lot of people hear, and then they stop creating, or they go, oh my gosh, I messed up. But, you know, in my career, I'm going to have ups and downs. I'm going to do things that some people don't agree with. I'm going to do things that a lot of people agree with. But I'm used to getting a lot of negativity for what I do. So for me, I'm just like, I'm Joy Villa. You know, I'm going to be my own self. I'm not going to deny who I am. I'm not going to deny what I believe is right and true to do and act and feel. So, you know, I'm loudly who I am. And a lot of people take issue with that, whether, you know, for what I wear, what I say, what I do. But I do believe that as long as I act in a way that I believe is right, and I'm not hurting anyone, and I'm doing the right thing, that I am in the right. So, yeah, you know, there was fallout, but I've moved on, and I've kept the fans and the friends and the people around me who understand I did the right thing.
Understood. Now, I am appreciative of your stance on abortion. You are pro-life. I had read that you basically had gotten pregnant, and instead of aborting the child, you gave him or her up for adoption.
Yeah. That's right.
I think that's a magnificent choice personally. It's really living by a certain code. I mean, how easy would it have been for you? I mean, hard, but in a sense, like, just to get rid of the, you know, quote unquote problem. What's your message regarding being pro-life?
Oh, perfect. Okay. I am proudly pro-life. As you know, I have been on Fox News talking about it. I have been on the red carpet at the Grammys talking about it and wearing my dress. When I decided to wear that dress, it is a portrait of my daughter when taken in the sonogram.
Oh, wow.
And when I decided to wear that dress and to be pro-life, and I've been openly pro-life before that. I was raised that way. But even before that, my social media, God really pulled on my heart to talk about what had happened, because I have gotten, I guess you could say, closure. You know, I was really young. I was 19, 20 when I gave birth. When I got pregnant, and it was a crisis pregnancy, the father was, you know, drug addict and abusive, physically abusive. You know, it was just a really bad, and I wasn't a mature person at all. I was involved in this drama, and I was fighting back, and we would hit each other. I mean, it was just a nasty, horrible situation. And then I brought a life in the middle of that. But instead of blaming that life, instead of saying, oh, I'm going to do the selfish thing, is I'm going to just get an abortion, I said, no, I have to raise this child or do something that would be the best for this child. And I prayed, and God showed me this. I was just praying. I was crying. Yeah. And I looked down, and I saw this newspaper that said, Loving Families Looking to Adopt. It was in the newspaper ad. And I called the number. It was an adoption agency. They talked me through it. They sent an awesome lady who had been adopted herself. She came out. She walked me through the whole process of choosing the family. And at the end of it, it's an open adoption. So I get to see her. I get to know her. I get to talk to her. And fast forward years later, I am a healthy, productive adult. I'm a grown woman now. You know, I'm successful, and I know who I am, and I know I made the right decision. And I know it's because I knew that her life needs to be thought about just as much as my life. Not that, oh, my life's a mess, so let me destroy someone else's life. I mean, murder, death is never the answer. Life is always the answer. So dealing with that situation, a lot of young girls, a lot of women are going through those situations, you know, married, unmarried, you know, alone with someone who's pressuring them, teenager, grown up, whatever. Men are going through it as well, right, with their spouses. And I encourage those people who are suffering to choose life, because at the end, you are giving life, you are putting life out there, you are promoting life, and you are cherishing and honoring not only the baby's life, but your own as a mother. I'm a mother today. I'm a birth mom. No, she calls me Mama Joy. So I've turned the situation that was a crisis into something beautiful, and that is because of adoption. And there are always options out there with raising your kid, and I work with a lot of charities that help, and I donate money to a lot of charities that help women, because this is an important factor in women's rights, or when we talk about, you know, being a feminist. Like, I call myself, I'm pro-woman. I mean, also unborn women, you know, because their lives matter just as much as my life matters. Just because I'm outside the womb doesn't mean I'm more important than someone who's inside the womb. So I'm never speaking to women from a place of condemnation or judgment. Ever would I do that, because I've been there. But I am speaking from a place of sharing my own struggle, my own story, and showing that it came out to be an amazing story. Life is not easy no matter what, you know, what you do, whether you raise a child. But if you abort a child, you're going to deal with that pain, that suffering, you know, 10 times more than if you gave a child up for adoption. You know, they're happy, they're living. There's a lot of stories, beautiful stories out there too. So I really want to promote life as much as I can. And luckily, I'm so blessed because this it went everywhere. The story just took off. It went viral, my struggles. And I was able to go on Fox News, talk about it. I penned a Fox News op-ed article sharing the story right after the Grammys. That was very important, that when you see me wearing a pro-life dress, that then you see the story of why, and why it's so important to me. And I'm doing a lot of stuff coming up in the pro-life movement to help with the heartbeat bill, which is coming up, which means that's a law that as soon as you can hear, it's trying to go into legislation, but as soon as you can hear the baby's heartbeat, it would make it illegal to abort that child. So that happens about 6 weeks, maybe 4 weeks in, you can start to hear the heartbeat. So that bill needs to pass. And all the pro-life organizations, the major ones, are for it except one. And I'm actually shooting a video this week talking about why is that one pro-life organization not on board, because they actually said, the legislative board actually said, you know, in government, that they would consider passing this bill. They would consider it. They would bring it to the table and look at it if the whole pro-life movement was, you know, in unison on it. But everyone is except for one agency. And that's they're not going to even look at it if that agency doesn't change their mind. They're choosing to be neutral on it, which is choosing to condemn millions of lives to death. So that's really important to me. And, in the next few upcoming months, you're going to see a lot more of my voice on this subject, and hoping to get this passed and really hoping to save lives. That's really what it's about, the mother's life, the baby's life, or saving lives.
You know, Joy, there's some big issues I wanted to tackle with you in this conversation we had. We've talked about two. The third, it's not that big of an issue. I'm really just interested in it. And by the way, sorry, thank you. That sounds awesome. All your pro-life talk and what you're going to do in the future. I applaud you for that.
Thank you.
Scientology. Okay. I've been hearing about Scientology a long time. I once got a personality test back in about 1996 in Seattle. I lived in Seattle for 20 years.
Nice.
Yeah. And at some point they started asking me for money and I was broke. And it just, at that point I had to excommunicate myself from going any further into it. But what's it about to you? I don't know, in a minute or two, like, how do you tell somebody what's great about Scientology? You know, and
yeah,
regarding
sure.
It's a two-parter regarding your congressional run possibly. I was watching Milo Yiannopoulos, who I'm also a fan of, talk about how Scientology in no way could work for the conservative voter. That whole thing. You know, what's Scientology about? What's great about it, first of all?
Sure. Well, the thing is, most people don't understand it. So,
yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. I've been a Scientologist for 7 years.
Yeah.
I study it. I use it. I love it. It's changed my life. It's tools for living. It's books that enable you to better communicate with others, to better understand life. It's knowledge, you know, and I believe that everyone could use some more knowledge in their life. Another great thing is that Scientology just launched their own television channel. So people can find out about it. You can even download an app on your phone, but it's just Scientology.tv. And you can stream, and on Scientology.tv, it shows everything that Scientology is about inside of the Scientology church, what they believe, what they study, meet a Scientologist. It's very open, and I love that because that's the thing. It's like a lot of my friends will be like, well, what is it? And usually I'll take them in and give them a tour so they can see for themselves. But a lot of people, maybe they don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. But it's extremely helpful for me, you know, dealing with the death of my parents. being able to go and have something that helps me, you know, that is a workable technology, like that's a religion that doesn't say you can't change your faith-based religion, because I'm a Christian. That's my faith-based religion. But that is more the philosophy of living in the here and now, how to work out relationships, how to work out, you know, dealing with money, dealing with difficult people. Those sort of things have really helped me a lot, especially in Hollywood. It's helped me definitely avoid a lot of things that I see a lot of my peers get caught up in, you know, drugs and alcohol, you know, promiscuity, all that stuff. It's just, that's very rampant. So for me, it's a great way to live.
Right on. Now, with Scientology, I've always looked at it kind of like, is it a way to be successful in your own life? I mean, the ones you hear about are these really, really successful people. You know, they've done these great things with their lives. Is that part of the allure? Because I feel like if there was a part of the allure of Scientology personally, from what I've heard about it, it'd be like, man, I'd like to be successful with my life. Is that part of it?
Yeah. Who doesn't want to be successful, right?
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. That is what it – that's – you see – these Scientologists that go and do great things, you know, in film and TV and everything else, it really is tools for living. I mean, it's how you use it. You know, in Scientology, you're given these tools, how to be successful. If you use it, it works. And there's nothing in there that says you have to believe or you have to do this. And there's a lot of free courses, too. It's something that's very easy and accessible, you know, these days. And for me, it has helped me be more successful, for sure. 7 years ago, I wasn't in the place I am now. And these tools have saved me years of heartache in dealing, especially in interpersonal relationships, like knowing who to spot, who's going to hurt me, who's going to harm me, or who's going to be on my side. Like a lot more, I'm able to choose, like, okay, well, that person, you know, is a good person. I can see, you know, there's tools on being able to spot through communication and work things out. And if you get into a communication issue, you know, fights and struggles, there's ways to be able to solve that in a way that everyone can be happy. So for me, that has been the most successful thing. In Hollywood, it's all about talking. It's all about communicating. It's all about business. Like, how can you approach someone and have the skills to be confident and not look at your past as holding you back?
So basically, it works for you. And who cares if somebody doesn't like it? Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like any, you know, anything that's going to help somebody, like, it's fine. If people don't like it, then don't do it. It works
right.
For me.
Right. Okay, so I told my aunt that I was interviewing you, and she knows about you because of the MAGA dress. And she was all on board with the Trump support, right? Then I mentioned, I said, Joy, she's a Scientologist, and her face just dropped. She's a Christian, you know, and she's just like,
yeah.
Oh God, like those people are nuts. And I thought it was really funny. But my question to you is, can the two be reconciled together?
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the biggest misunderstandings. Yeah.
Yeah.
Shout out to your aunt, by the way. What a cutie. But yeah, oh, absolutely. That's the thing. You know, I was raised Christian, and that the Christian religion is all about Jesus Christ, you know, dying for our sins as our Lord and Savior. And it's a faith-based religion. You have to accept God and Christ on faith, right? That's what it's about.
Right.
And Scientology is not a faith-based religion. It's a religious technology. It says you are a spiritual being, and these are tools to live as a spirit and to solve interpersonal relationships or to solve things in life, in the here and now. So the two can reconcile quite easily. There's actually a lot of Scientologists who are also, you know, the Jewish faith or Muslim faith Sikh. It's a philosophy that you can use in accordance with your own faith-based religion. So there's nothing there that prohibits anything. In fact, they encourage, the founder, L. Ron Hubbard, encourage you to keep your own religion when you come in. It's not something that's like going to take away what you already have. And I think a lot of people think in that, you know, when you think of religion, you have to convert, and so to speak. You don't convert anything in Scientology.
I think the first time I ever heard of anything Scientology-based was in a movie called Repo Man, one of my favorite movies out of L.A. in about 1984. And a gentleman named Light tries to pass on Dianetics to Otto. And I don't know. Have you ever seen that movie, Repo Man?
No, I haven't seen it. The 80s, man, the golden age of film. But I didn't see Top Gun. I just saw Top Gun. I know.
Yeah, did you like it?
I loved it because I thought, oh, you know, I love Tom Cruise. I love the 80s, but I'm like, it came out in 86. That was the year I was born. I was like, oh, it's going to be cheesy. You know, I feel like I missed that age of a lot of those 80s films, you know. But I actually was super well shot, and it actually holds up today. I was like, oh, yeah, sure, it was a little cheesy in the romance, you know. But Val Kilmer, man, what, you know, he was so cute back in those days, too.
He's a hottie for sure.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, he was for Val. Tom still looks hot, though.
Have you met Tom Cruise?
No, I wish.
Never met Tom Cruise, yeah.
I've never met Tom Cruise, no. He's a big-time movie star. I'd love to meet him, though.
Have you met Alex Jones?
I have met Alex Jones. Well, not in person, like met him physically. But I've been on his show multiple times. He's one of the first ones that had me on his show right after I wore my Trump dress, my pro-Trump dress, my Make America Great Again. And he's incredible. I love
that
Alex
dude is
Jones.
Intense. Yeah, I'm a big fan of his as well.
Yeah, he is intense. I mean, he is. That's how he really is. He is 100% dedicated to what he does. So we've talked multiple times on the phone and on his show. He's a great guy, great ally, and really a freedom fighter.
He called you MAGA Monroe, which I thought was clever.
I know. He called me MAGA Monroe. I love it. I love that. I still get fans who hashtag that. I love it.
Well, listen, tell me about your Periscope, because that's how I found you. And I knew who you were. I knew the MAGA address and all that.
Yeah.
But then I was scrolling on Twitter, and there you were live, getting ready for a workout, saying all this. I just thought, man, this woman is inspiring. She's got some energy, and there's not a cynical bone in her body. Tell me a little bit about that, how people can come find you these days, aside from music, obviously.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can find my music on iTunes, Amazon, you know, Google Play, Spotify. You can find me on my show. I've just coined it. It's the Joy Villa Show, hashtag Joy Villa Show. And that's how you can find, you can search on Twitter or Facebook and then find all the other shows. But my Periscope is live streaming, and I do it as often as I can. I'm going to start to put in a regular schedule, but right now it's probably like 2 times a week. Sometimes more, especially if I have red carpet events or anything, I think, or there are certain news topics that I really want to talk about. And my Periscope is my Twitter, which is @joy_villa, @joy_villa. If they can find me on Twitter, and then also the same thing on Periscope, periscope.tv/joy_villa. I'd love to do a lot more, and I've gotten some offers to do an actual show. So right now it's a live streaming show. And then in the future, I don't want to take away the live element, though. I think that's what my fans really love. And I really love talking and hearing from others, because remember, I live in a bubble, and I lived in the bubble before I came out pro Trump. I had no idea there were so many of us. And now I've been to the White House. Now I've got to meet the administration and, you know, and Ivanka and,
right. How is Trump in person?
You know, I haven't actually met him in person yet.
Oh, okay.
I haven't actually officially met him, which is crazy. Most people think I have, but I've been in the same room and seen him, and it's just our schedules haven't worked out to where we can actually meet, but we will. It's easy, you know. I'll just every time I'm in D.C., I go to the White House, and you know, I've been at the Hispanic Heritage Month and different events there. The Christmas party, I was there, so that was really exciting. But yeah, and I've seen him speak many times. But you know, and he's tweeted me, so he knows I'm a strong supporter, holding it down. But being able to be out there online, you know, the online world is a two-edged sword. At one point, I use it to, you know, promote the things I do and love, and to speak to others who also love. On the other end, you can feel like everyone attacks you or hates you, or everyone hates the things you love. So it is good to unplug as often as possible. That's why I'm not cynical. I'm offline a lot. You know, when I'm online, I'm online. I'm doing stuff. The rest of the time, I'm exercising. I'm spending time with my family and my husband. I'm creating music. You know, I'm going to events on Capitol Hill, you know, trying to make change, supporting the president, out there doing speaking engagements in universities and schools and high schools, and performing, doing what I love, talking to people like you. And also, I have to promote something that is coming out. I'm very excited. Yeah. I'm launching my new Joy Villa singing pen. Jay Kami, I don't know if you know who Jay Kami is, but he created the Hillary laughing pen, which has an apple. And he created the Trump pen, talking Trump pen, which is amazing.
Whoa.
Well, now there's a Joy Bella singing pen, and I sing the national anthem, and I'm wearing my Make America Great Again dress. And that is on sale. It's $19.99, and you can find it on Amazon. You just look for Joy Bella singing pen. And
more
I'm
radical.
So excited. Yeah, it's beautiful, the packaging, everything, and I sing the national anthem, the whole pen. It's a beautiful pen. Like, you can write with it, has my face and my body on it, and I sing. Yeah, people love it. Kids really love it. But
it's my
love for the national anthem.
That sounds like a gift for my grandma. She was pretty stoked that I was talking to you, so, yeah.
Oh,
get
grandma.
That for her.
Yay. And maybe your aunt, too. Maybe she still loves me.
Yeah. Well, she just, as I mentioned, Scientology, she's like, oh.
Yeah, see, a lot of people don't understand it. That's why I'm always, like, I like to talk about it. But you can go to Scientology.tv and see that there's normal family people, just like anyone who wants to better their life. It's like anyone, you know, who wants to have a better life and wants to help others have a better life, you know. There's a lot more good people in this world than there are bad. We can't forget that.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. Are you touring America anytime soon? Like, can people come out and see you play or?
I am. I'm going to be doing a lot of shows. And right now I'm going to be doing a trip. I'm doing a little promotional trip in London for a week.
Okay.
And then I'll come back. And then I'm going to be setting up my band and starting to do some shows. Either I'm going to do a tour this year or I will plan it for early next year. Because I really want it to be great, but I will be traveling and doing speaking if it's not going to be the whole shebang with music. But
okay.
I will be traveling to different places, doing speaking engagements, you know, and I'll be in D.C. I'm in D.C. all the time. But I do want to do some of the stuff like Texas and Middle America, you know, really go and visit the people who support the president, support my music, who are great people. Like, I love getting out there. So definitely
look for
a tour coming up soon. You can go to joyvilla.com.
You should come to Western Pennsylvania. There's a house here called the Trump House, about 20 miles from my place. And it's done by a woman named Leslie Rossi. It's one of her properties, but it's painted as an American flag, and there's a 20-foot Trump cutout in the front yard.
What?
And in 2016, I do believe Pennsylvania flipped for Trump because of her. It's just my theory. But she gave away free Trump gear to anybody. I mean, she's probably spent $100,000 on, like, quality MAGA hat, quality this, that, and the other.
Wow. And she just gave it away?
You had to sign up, I believe, and it was one item per person, but it was, like, one of each of the items. You go, you get one hat, one T-shirt, one pen, whatever it was. Who she gave it away
That's
for, like, six months. Yeah, it was crazy.
That's incredible. That's a real campaigner. That woman needs the president in the White House. That's awesome. That's why I love this movement. You know, the MAGA movement, the COG movement, right? Keep America great. You know, we're fighters. We care about American values. We care about, you know, protecting our borders, protecting our family, and making sure that, you know, we get to live our way of life. The Western United States way of life is the best in the world. That's why so many people want to come here. So we got to protect it, protect those who you know, who love it. And I'm proud. I'm proud to be amongst amazing people in our military. You know, it's just a lot to be grateful for. Well, I got to fly, Jesse.
All right, Joy.
Hey,
it's been an hour. This has been awesome. You told me a half hour. We got you for an hour.
Oh, thank you. Well, I love it. I love it. We talked about a lot of great stuff, and I hope your listeners love it. I will promote it. And it's so great that you saw me on Periscope, and now look it, I'm on your podcast. Booyah.
Here we are. All right, Joy, any parting words before we go?
You know that you are powerful. Know that you can make real, active, lasting change in the lives of others and in your own life. Realize that the online digital world and the hate you may get for your beliefs is not real. Go out there, you know, be who you are, be bold, and speak your mind, and get out there and do something. Action creates reaction. So just ignore some of the bad reactions and keep moving, keep looking up, keep moving forward. That's what we got to do.
You've been on the Shit Show with J-Lo, and I thank you. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right. Thanks, Jesse. Bye.
Take care. Bye.
wheels are itching to hit the road. Shake the stress off and just let go. I want glitter like a disco ball. Let my light shine and just take off. My heart is pounding to just be free. Body swaying like a Cali palm tree.
Vagabonds, we keep on going.